You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. And when I was thinking about this show, I wasn't seeing any news story that really grabbed me, that I really wanted to prepare on, until I saw this rather small story about their upgrading this program that I was totally unaware of until I looked on the Drudge Report. And there's this story. I looked at it, and I said, well, there's a big story here. Because my first reaction was a little different. Not that this program doesn't have a use, but why is Department of Energy doing it? Now, I understand why they'd be tempted to do this and doing it, but it's not really the function of the federal government to develop software that can be used for the private sector. It's simply not. And I have a bigger problem with the Department of Energy is, I believe, 8 to 10 federal departments, and I'm really closer to 10, need to be permanently shut down. I'm not talking one of these temporary shutdowns that they have. We've had a bunch of them, most recent one in October. I'm talking permanently shut down. And there's a favorite video of mine that I have on my notes for this show. And for those that are first-time listeners, the way you listen to this show is go to my companion blog for the show is pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronkpops, pronkpops.wordpress.com. At the very top, you'll have links to usually the last 60 shows at the very top, direct links. You click on the link, it'll take you to Podomatic, and the show will be streamed to you, or you can download it. And below that, you'll have a complete archive of all my shows. And this is the 191st show, and 200 will be a milestone, and I'm going to be making some major changes. I'm definitely going to have some changes starting off the 200th show. I've already made some minor ones already, but we're going to have not a change of format. This is a talk radio show. I do commentary and present my opinion on news stories. And since, as far as I'm concerned, there are not many major news stories today. The one I kept hearing about over and over and over again is there was a flight, I believe it originated in Chicago, with a stop at Branson, the pilot landed in the wrong airport. That's embarrassing. But I can understand, I don't know the weather conditions, but I can understand how that could happen. I used to fly small planes, not in the night, in daytime. I never finished my life. I had about 110 hours, but I finally, I got busy in the job. I was paying for this myself. It got prohibitively expensive, and I was about to sort of launch on first get your private license, then get your commercial license, then get your instrument, and then get your, I think, what is it called, ATP, your airline transport pilot license, and was considering possibility of a career in civil, well, being an airline pilot, but to pay for that all on my own. Well, that's a lot of money and a lot of time and a lot of hours. And it just simply was interfering with my military job at the time. I was in the Air Force. And after, I scheduled about three or four tests. You know, you need to have an examiner. This is somewhat of a detour, but I get back. Every time I would schedule it, and I would schedule it for a Saturday, the weather would cancel it. And after, I think I prepped three, maybe four times. At that point, I got so frustrated because I wanted to move on. I wanted to get my private pilot license and then go for my commercial. And at that, just about that time, my job really picked up. I had to go out of town a lot, so I let it drop. But if I had the money and the time, guess what? I would pursue it. But I talked to a number of my Air Force buddies. Most of them were pilots. Many of them were fighter pilots. And I asked him one day at the bar at happy hour, I said, to be proficient, how many hours a month minimum that you would need to fly to really be competent at it, keep current, if you will? And I got a couple different answers, but most would say between 30 and 50 hours a month, especially when you're starting out in particular. Well, I couldn't afford 30 or 50 hours. I was lucky if I could do 10 or 12 in a week, and usually that was either on a Friday or Friday afternoon or Saturday, occasionally a Sunday. So I said, I'm going to have to give this up until later. Well, later never came. It's one of those things I wish I had completed, but I was trying to map this out as a possible alternative career. Now, I'm sort of glad I didn't pursue it because that's a lot of time, a lot of money, and there's no guarantee that you would get a job as a pilot because most of the airlines, at least then, I don't know about now, they would get military pilots, either Air Force or Navy pilots. Now, I'm leading up to this story. I could see where in a nighttime conditions, bad weather, I don't know if there was bad weather, especially if the airports are fairly close, that this could happen, and obviously did happen. It's very, very embarrassing, especially if you're an airline pilot. It's somewhat different if you're a private pilot and piloting your own small plane. But when you have passengers, you not only get red-faced, well, what happened? Because you're flying instruments, and, you know, that's the one question I had. Usually, you know what I think happened? And usually your co-pilot says, oh, there's the airport, and you get focused on it, not realizing it's not the right airport, that there are really two. You need to be careful. And it could be the very first time they went into it. I don't know. And then I believe this flight ended in Dallas, so people got in a lot late. And the runway, what the news stories was emphasizing, well, the runway is about half what it should be. They didn't say what the length of the runway is. Because one of the questions I still was scratching my head, well, if the runway is half, do they have enough runway to take off? Because this has happened before. And in one situation, it was just too short. There's no way, even if it's empty, to take off. Because you need, depending on the plane and how loaded it is, a certain length of runway. Apparently they took off, but I'm sure that pilot's embarrassed. He's on the carpet, and it's going to definitely be investigated, and it should be. And I'm willing to bet that pilot has probably thousands of hours of flying. It can happen. Mistakes happen. Fortunately, no one was hurt or injured, which is nice. But that seemed to be the lead story. There's not much there. Not much there. I'm glad I wasn't on that flight. After 911, I have deliberately not flown. Not that I'm afraid of the terrorists. It's I don't like the TSA and what they're doing. Really, the one entity that has the most interest to make sure that the people get on that plane, should be getting on that plane, are the airlines. I believe the airline should have a responsibility for security, not the federal government. And it is the federal government. These people are under Homeland Security. And the reason I'm talking about this is there are 10 departments I would eliminate. And I'm not the only one that have said this. There's one of my favorite videos, and I do have it here. I believe I have it right at the top. Well, not at the very top. This is the second video. Take It to the Limits, Milton Friedman on Libertarianism. And it's really towards the end of this video, probably about two-thirds in it, where the interviewer, and this show is uncommon knowledge, asked Milton Friedman, he died several years ago. He was a very famous economist, winner of the Nobel laureate in economics. I believe he won it in 1976, is my recollection. He also was president of the American Economic Association, had a number of shows, books, very successful, accomplished economist. He was also a noted libertarian, and there are different types of libertarians. I need to say this, and there's some disagreements between libertarians. It's not a monolithic political philosophy. But the interviewer was asking him, okay, let's cut to the chase. We have 14 federal departments. Because this is television, we can't go through and discuss each of the 14 departments, but which ones would you eliminate? Well, I'm not going to go through the list, but I will say, and I agree with him here, here's the ones he would keep. Department of Defense, Department of State, Department of Treasury to collect taxes, and the Department of Justice. And regarding the Energy Department, the part that deals with nuclear energy for weapons should be transferred to the Department of Defense. Now, what about all the rest, the 10 other departments? Here's where I agree with them, and there's actually one more now. Close them down. It's not the job, it's not the function of the federal government to provide subsidies, provide services that many of these departments do, including the Department of Energy. There's no need for a Department of Energy. And I always get the list a little bit long, but I'll try to get through most of them. Milton Friedman was saying, close the Department of Agriculture. Close the Department of Commerce. Close the Department of Energy and Education and the Department of Interior and Housing and Urban Development and Health and Human Service, with one small exception, the part that deals with public health issues. Department of Transportation, gone, closed. One that we wasn't asked about was Homeland Security, same thing. Now, I've missed some. Department of Labor, for example, close it. So today, he came up with 10 and a half. Excuse me, close 9 and a half. Today, I would say that number is 10 and a half. I think you can make very, very strong cases for at least 8, if not 10. Now, Department of Veteran Affairs, he makes the point, pay the soldiers off. These are benefits that they've earned as a result of their services. Pay them off. Either give them a lump sum or give them insurance. For example, if you're wounded as have a service-related disability, provide them a health insurance, and then they go to any hospital or doctor that's near them instead of having going to the veterans hospital, hat in hand and waiting in line and waiting for an appointment. I'm for that. Now, that, to some people out there, man, that's radical. We can't do that. We can't do that. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have to do that. It's not going to be optional. It's only a matter of time before, and it's not going to happen all at once. But this big government that's gotten bigger and bigger over the last 100, this really started over 100 years ago, over 110 years ago. If you're looking for a president, it started with Theodore Roosevelt. Now, what's ratcheted up the size and the scope and the budgets of the federal government, in particular, all these 10 departments, especially the Defense Department, has been wars. After every war, the size of the federal government is just a little bit bigger. And obviously, during war, defense spendings go up. And you can see it. And there's a very good interview. It's called Our Ever-Growing Dependence on Government. And it's a terrific video because it has an animation and it lists several areas. For example, pensions, education, health, some of the major categories, welfare, other, interest on the debt. It gives you an animation with a picture of the president and shows you how it's grown over time and what's happened in terms of what were the deficits under each of these presidents over time, as well as where the national debt is. And the problem, ladies and gentlemen, the national debt, for example, and this is only the tip of the iceberg, it's quickly approaching $18 trillion. That's more than all the final goods and services produced last year as well as this year. I don't have in front of me the exact numbers for either the nominal or real numbers of GDP. It was around $17 trillion. And we're over $17 trillion already. And that's all, that's the real gross domestic product, GDP. That's the debt. But that's the tip of the iceberg, because what's left? So-called unfunded liabilities, primarily for Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. And you'll see how over time what explodes, because this didn't happen overnight, the federal government getting bigger and bigger and more in debt. Although the worst has really been the last five years of President Obama, in particular when the Democrats controlled the House and the Senate. But when the Republicans controlled the House, the Senate, and the presidency, as did the Democrats did for 2 years, and prior to that, they still control the House and Senate, starting in 2007. Both, this has happened under Republican presidents and Democratic presidents. And it's not just the presidents you have to look at. You have to look at who controlled the House of Representatives and who controlled the Senate. Both political parties are to blame. That's why I'm not a Republican or a Democrat. And report after report, economist after economist has said this. The word they use, and I wish I could come up with a better word, it's unsustainable. We can't keep doing this. And I agree, you can't. Because the unfunded liabilities for Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid are over $120 trillion. And that includes Obamacare in there. And you're going to get a big range of estimates. And what that means is the federal government can't pay. Let me say this another way. The federal government today would need over $100 trillion to fund future Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid expenditures. They don't have it. They're short. Ultimately, what this means, if some fundamental reforms are not made and some of these programs are not eliminated in their entirely, you won't be getting benefits, or if you're going to get any benefits, it's going to be a shrinking benefit. What's happened is politicians that promoted these programs, acted like Santa Claus, overpromised. Most of them are dead. We celebrated last week the 50th anniversary of the so-called war on poverty. We spent over $20 trillion on various programs designed to reduce the poverty rate, which actually has increased. We have more welfare programs as well as entitlement programs today, and that's what's banking this country. We have more people dependent on the government than we've ever had, and we're reaching a tipping point where there are more people dependent on the government for a check than are working. That's the problem. The core problem today is out of control government spending. And until government spending is stopped, we're going to have high rates of unemployment. Everyone agrees now that last week's jobs report, although some say it's an outlier or it's due to the weather, I'm just going to take it at face value. It was terrible. It was really terrible because it sent a wrong message. If you're like many people that really don't follow this, all you heard was that the unemployment rate went down from 7% to 6.7%. Now, yes, the unemployment rate has been going down over the entire, gradually over the last year. But most, not all, but most of that was due to people leaving the labor force, at least in terms of the way the Department of Labor, one of those departments that I'd get rid of, by the way, calculate the unemployment rate. They don't count. If you don't look for a job, when they do their household survey, and it's from that survey that the unemployment rate is determined, it's a sample. A survey is a sample. You sample the population of the United States, and it's a sample of approximately 60,000 households. They will either knock on the door or call you and ask questions. Are you employed? Yes or no? If you're yes, fine. How many hours did you work? There's some questions. Let's say you say, no, I'm unemployed. Another question they'll ask, have you looked for a job in the last 4 weeks? Yes, I have. If you say, yes, I have looked for a job in the last 4 weeks, you count as being unemployed. But what if you say, no, I've been looking and looking for the last year or 2 years. I've gotten nowhere. This month or the last six, seven weeks, I have not looked. You're not counted as being unemployed. So the government tries to put a shiny face on this, give you the good news. And this is the so-called U3 unemployment rate, so it also called the headline number, because you'll hear it in the news reports on television and the radio and the newspapers. The problem is, over 400,000 people left the labor force. And you see this, where this number is picked up. It's in the report, and if you go to the last show, I give you the details. But the number I look at is what happened to the labor participation rate. Well, it went down to 62.8%, the lowest civilian labor participation rate since March. You have to go back to March of 1978 to get a 62.8% labor participation rate. Ladies and gentlemen, this was a terrible report. Now, what economists will say, and many of them were saying, well, you got to take all these reports with a grain of salt because the numbers are revised. Yes, they are. And I will not be surprised if this 74,000 number is revised, probably upward. It might not be. It could go down, because they do make corrections. They do have more information. So we'll see. But what you need to understand, and I said it last show, you need just to have the unemployment rate legitimately go down 0.1%. You need 300,000 jobs created in a month. That's just 0.1%. If you were to legitimately go down to 0.3%, like it did, in other words, it went from 7% to 6.7%, you need approximately 600,000 jobs being created. 600,000 jobs were not created. 74,000 were. Just a little above 10% of what was really needed to be legitimate. And by legitimate, I mean the fact that the jobs were created as opposed to people leaving the labor force. See, when you technically leave the labor force, you're not applying for a job. You're not looking for a job. You want a job. If they ask you, are you unemployed? You say, yeah, I'm unemployed. I take a job. I'm ready, willing, and able to work. I have in the past looked for a job. I consider myself unemployed. However, here's the catch. If you didn't look for a job in the last 4 weeks, according to the Department of Labor's Bureau of Labor Statistics, you're not counted as unemployed. You're counted as being outside the labor force. You're not participating in the labor force. You see, think of the total civilian labor force as consisting of people that are employed, unemployed, and not participating. You're going to fall in one of those three categories. If you're working, it doesn't matter whether it's full-time or part-time, you're considered employed. And see, one of the problems is many of the people that are working today really want a full-time job and can't find one, but they're counted as employed. They might be working part-time, less than 20 hours a week. If you're lucky, less than 30 hours a week. Now, why are we in this situation? And what do we need to do to get out of this situation? And this is why I focused in on this story. There's no silver bullet here to correct the situation. We need much higher growth rates. Why? To the extent that we have a growth rate of the real GDP of 4, 5, 6%, in other words, business is booming, we need those types of growth rates because jobs are created in the private sector. And in terms of business owners, as well as other, it could be cities, churches, charities, colleges, universities, school districts, you name it. But most of the jobs are created in the private sector by small business owners that have just started their business. Those are the job creators. It's the small and medium-sized small businesses, new businesses, that are forming. What's anathema to those people is uncertainty. And the biggest uncertainty, and you see it in the news at least once a week, is the growing massive size of the deficits where the government is spending more money than it collects. At every dollar, about 35 cents has to be financed. In other words, the Treasury, Department of Treasury, one of those departments that we got to keep because they need to collect taxes, they're borrowing the money. That's why the national debt has gone up, up, and up. And we'll hit $18 trillion sometime in the next 3 or 4 months. And the interest on the debt, because it gets bigger and bigger, goes up, up, and up. And it's going to, and the reason I say these departments are going to have to be closed as that debt level goes up and up and the interest with it goes up and up and up. What gets squeezed out? The budgets of these departments. Now, what the bureaucracy is going to try to do and what both political parties are going to try to do is stop. What they should do is either permanently close the department or dramatically cut the budgets. They're not going to do either one. They're just going to kick the can down the road. As long as they can until it blows up. The debt time bomb will blow up. And it will be at that point where you'll start to see radical and forced cutting of these budgets. And what really needs to be done is the shutting down of those 8 to 10 departments. And Department of, you know, if you ask me what my top three were, the same ones that Ronald Reagan was unable to shut these departments down. Department of Energy, the Department of Education, and the Department of Commerce. What I'm saying is this small little program is just one of many things that the Department of Energy, that as far as I'm concerned, shouldn't exist. The private sector is perfectly capable of producing electricity, gasoline, anything that requires energy, the private sector can provide it and is providing it and will continue to be providing it. We don't need a Department of Energy. But we have thousands of people with billions of dollars, and this is just one department. It's not the biggest department, but this is one that those are the top three of most people. But three is not enough. Really, 10 should be shut down. And they will be shut down. Now, you're probably saying, well, when? Are you making a prediction? I have no idea. But I'll tell you what will cause it. It will be the ballooning of the interest. See, today, interest, because the Federal Reserve is really manipulating the interest rates. They're suppressing the federal funds rate, which is the rate that banks charge each another for short-term 24-hour money in order that the banks can meet their reserve requirements. It's short-term lending, bank-to-bank. You can't borrow at the federal funds rate. But the Federal Reserve now, since December of 2008, has kept the federal funds rate at 25 basis points or a quarter of a percent. If you look at what the federal funds rate has done, and which I have, over the last 50 or 60 years, half the time it's over 5%, and the other half it's below 5%, usually somewhere in between the 2 to 4% range. But for the last 2009, 10, 11, 12, 13, over 5 years, the Federal Reserve has manipulated and kept down the federal funds rate for various reasons. And one of the reasons is what it's doing with so-called quantitative easing, which is another way of saying printing money. I prefer saying creating money at a keyboard. It's what I call DEMS, digital electronic money, that someone sits at a keyboard and creates. What they're doing in conjunction with the Department of Treasury is enabling the Department of Treasury to borrow at lower rates. At some point, they're going to have to quit this easy money policy, and that's what it's called. It's an easy money policy. Can't get much easier than a federal funds rate of 25 basis points. At some point, inflation is going to come roaring back, and the Federal Reserve, to stop inflation or a general increase in the price level, is going to have a tight money policy. It's going to happen. And when that happens, is what's going to happen to the cost of borrowing for the Department of Treasury? It's going to go through the roof, because a large percentage of the Treasury bills today are being bought by the Federal Reserve. And all the Federal Reserve is doing at a keyboard, what happens is they buy Treasury securities. That goes on the Federal Reserve's balance sheet as an asset. And the liability that they issue and give to the Treasury Department is a Federal Reserve note. Take a dollar bill out of your note, out of your wallet, or $10, and see what it says, a Federal Reserve note. What's a Federal Reserve note? That's an IOU. So all they're doing is giving a credit. They don't actually send money or dollar bills to the Treasury Department, but they give a credit to the Treasury Department. And what the Treasury Department does is then pay its bills. And like I said, about 35% of every dollar they're spending has to be financed this way, because we're not getting enough tax revenues. What's that a clear sign of? We're overspending. If we had a balanced budget, the Federal Reserve would have to, if we had a balanced budget, the U.S. Treasury Department would have to borrow nothing. But we don't have a balanced budget. What we have is one that's been out of balance. I believe this is the 12th or 13th fiscal year in a row, and way out of balance. The first four budgets of the President of the United States, Obama, it's been over $1 trillion, $1.4 trillion, $1.3 trillion, slightly under $1.3 trillion, slightly under $1.1 trillion, and last year it was $688 billion. We've had some improvement, but we're nowhere near balancing. And see, there's not a political will on the part of the Democratic Party, which are really, forget it, they're not going to balance. The way the Democratic Party would want to balance the budget is to increase taxes. Now, I'm bringing back this to the jobs report. And the reason I'm using this as an example, what would really need to be happening to encourage business formation and capital formation? What would really send a clear message to the business community that the federal government has got its act together? One is if we had a balanced budget, or we're quickly going to have one soon, and soon is like next year or the next 2 years. But the other thing would be to shut down federal departments or dramatically decrease the budget of these federal departments. Are they doing that? No, they're not. They are not. We will probably have another deficit for this fiscal year 2014, that will probably be approaching $1 trillion, if not more than $1 trillion. I don't think it's going to continue down this decline. And all it would take is another recession, even a mild recession. And what would happen? One, you'd see massive layoffs. The unemployment rate would shoot right back up to over 9%. It probably hit 10 or 11%. And what would sink down? Government tax collections or tax revenues. I'm not seeing anything. And this is, as a business owner, they're looking at this. And they're seeing these massive deficits year after year after year. They're seeing higher and higher national debt. They're seeing more and more people leaving the labor force. And see what that, you know, some people, let me say a word to be fair here. Some people retire and leave the labor force for good. And some of that's going on. But that's not the case here. The majority of the people that are leaving the labor force are leaving it because they can't find a job, either part-time or full-time. And what does that mean for business? Those are people that don't have an income coming in. They're going to have to be using existing savings or their retirement funds or college funds that they might have saved for their kids to live on, to pay the mortgage, because they can't find a job. And if that's the situation, what does that mean for business? People are going to be tight with their money. They're not going to go on spending sprees. We have a very negative environment to really provide incentive for individuals, entrepreneurs, to form new businesses, and to the extent that they've already started a business, to expand them. There are too many negative things going on, including rising tax rates. Obamacare has almost two dozen. I lost count, but they have about 20 increases in taxes directly traced to Obamacare, as well as increases in capital gains taxes, as well as income taxes. Do you think that encouraged people to start a business? No, it doesn't. It does not. And on top of it, you have the uncertainty caused, and it's big-time uncertainty. And this is very, very important. Even the Keynesians should know this, because Maynard Keynes, the famous economist that died in 1946, that advocated running deficits in times of a depression, and what he really advocated was public works by the federal government to take the place of really a lack of investment. We're not in a recession. Technically, we're not in a recession now because we've had positive growth since July of 2009. So technically, we have not had another two quarters of negative growth in the GDP. I'm looking at the time. I'm going to need to wrap it up shortly. But so we're not in a recession yet, but we're overdue for one. And when it hits, what's going to happen? Growth rates are going to go down. They're running around 2%, 2.5%. I know they had a spike up in the last quarter. But on average, over a longer period, it's been running about 2%, between 2 and 2.5%. That'll never get you back to full employment, where full employment is somewhere between 3 to 4%. And that's where we need to be. This is by far the worst economic recovery, post-World War II recovery, and what we need to be seeing is closing the federal departments. And one place to start is the U.S. Department of Energy, Commerce Department, and the Educational Department. That's where we need to stop. I'll wrap up the show now. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. I hope the show has been educational, enlightening, and maybe entertaining, but I want you to start thinking. The answer is not more and more government. The answer is not becoming dependent on the government. The answer is finding jobs and encourage businesses to open businesses so your children can find jobs. Thank you for listening, and now back to the music.